us in our community. I think in our community, in this country, I see sometimes oppression to women. I don't see it in the villages, because at least in a village, you can go next door and visit your neighbor. Here, your neighbor is American, and you cannot talk to them, and you cannot do anything without driving. You don't need that. And when we talk about Arab American, that's what I was trying to say. For example, here we have few Americans like Jim Abu Rizzi and Abdin Jabbar and other few who have made it in this society. They talked about, okay, we've made it, let's look at Arab American and let's try to help the Arab American and fight the stereotype, okay? And I'm talking about we as Arab American women in this room or in many organizations who have made it, quote unquote made it. We still have a lot of ways to go, I think. Okay, we have made it. Let's rather than sit here and as individuals and enjoy the rights that we have accomplished, let's, if we want to talk about Arab American women as a collective, being Christian or Muslim, let's extend our hand to them and help them get out of where they are blocked in. And when I said we have to have a comprehensive program, if you go to a woman who doesn't speak the language, doesn't drive, and you sit there and lecture her about Arab women and women equality and you should stand up to your husband, that doesn't help her. That will increase her frustration. Okay, can we open schools where women learn how to read and write? English. We started a program for Palestinian women in Detroit, and we're finding that many women would like to learn how to drive. Because if they know how to drive, they can go to the store and get their grocery. They want to learn English because they can communicate with people. Before you tell them, fight with your husbands. Okay, and that's some parts of the feminist movement that you increase the frustration of women because you give them example of, look at me, I do this and I do that and I don't listen, but you don't give them the tool to fight with, which is education, being able to transport it. Also, many of our women, and let me talk about Palestinian women because I'm involved in a Palestinian woman more than, the national issue does concern them. They want to help their sisters, their brothers in the occupied territories. The language concerns them. They want their children to learn Arabic, to grow as a Palestinian. Unless we address these concerns, we become a feminist movement from a middle class to go address these people who are recent immigrants, mostly come from a village background. They cannot relate to us. We cannot relate to them. We come to them as lecturer and as from the top, as an elite, and it's not going to work. We have to integrate. And I don't think in anything that we presented that is against our culture or against Islam. I don't think Islam allow women to sit home in a country they didn't make a choice to come to because they came as wives. They don't know the language. They cannot travel. If their son gets sick, cannot take it to a doctor. This is against every value I know of Christianity and Islam too.
Hello, my name is Rajaa Gharbi, and I was born and raised and went to school in North Africa. I'm Tunisian. And I'd like to say this, I have several comments. I came from Seattle to this conference and very happy to be here. I'd like to say that North African women have been shining by our absence in these kinds of Middle Eastern gatherings. And not that that's the only thing we shine in. We shine a lot, and we have lots of things to say. And we are very busy in several places in the U.S. fighting gynocentrism, what Magni El Azraq, who's an Algerian scholar, calls gynocentrism, which is white woman's racism or ethnocentrism against the Arab women in particular. We also organize successfully in support of our sisters in Palestine and the rest of the Arab world. And there were several times here where women mentioned that Arab women should speak independently. I personally do. I'm not a movement on my own. Sometimes I tend to believe that, though. In these kinds of places, it feels very exclusive. And hopefully next year, maybe some of us will be contacted. There's one thing I'd like to say, and that is I think the voice of dissent is there. We do have it. We don't have to search for a voice. What we have to do is fight for its survival more than anything else. And I would like to suggest that we form something on our own where our men, Arab men, will be welcome on occasions or when needed, when they would like to, on invitations. But I think we really do need an independent movement. I don't know what you think of the Arab Women's Association's Solidarity Association in Cairo, but I think it's not a bad example. Maybe we can start one here. The last thing I'd like to say is that, yes, it is much easier for us to address certain issues here because there are some illusionary freedoms. And yes, our lives are different. If we were in the Arab world, we would be dealing differently. And I'm saying this to you, Nahla, in all sisterhood. I find it a little bit condescending to Arab women who are really jailed in their veils in the Arab world for you to identify with their oppressors rather than they, the women, and say they choose to wear the veil. I really don't think they choose to do so.
Okay. I tend to disagree with you here, although I acknowledge that I did not say all women wear it by choice. I said some women wear it by choice. Some women, it's imposed on them. I'm against that. But you have to remember that in the past 10 years, a lot of Arab women in this country have started wearing the veil. And I personally compare it to the Indians going back to wearing homespun as a sign of independence. And I do know that a lot of Arab women have chosen to do it on their own, especially the women in North America, and that is a fact.
Okay, the other thing,
excuse me, we do have a long line and we don't have that much time. So I'm going to have ask you to please allow the woman behind you.
Could you take a suggestion? I'm willing to do that, yes. But I would like for the woman to have the place for the rest of this discussion, if possible, because we don't have this opportunity very often.
We have already established that we do need to organize a women's caucus, and we do have a lot of things on our agenda, and we need to take them further. But for the moment, let's please allow the people who are standing in line to pose their question. Please proceed.
Okay, my name is Sahar Bezaz, and I'm addressing this to any of you who want to respond. I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit about the importance of coalition work and tying up with other feminist movements such as the Black community, the Latino community, women of lower economic status, because I think that, and this was discussed a lot, that the mainstream feminist movement in this country is very much a white and middle class bourgeois movement. And so like when you get people like Maureen Reagan talking about women's rights and then going to the Women's Day events, the United Nations thing, and you see this amazing collaboration between women of the third world, I think that's something that we should learn from. If anyone wants to comment.
Would anyone like to respond here?
Is Evelyn here?
Yes,
Evelyn. I guess the question was, is FAN, the Feminist Arab Network, is it still in existence?
The basis. Talking about.
Right.
Well, I'm just saying, since I'm the one who proposed the caucus, I really think it's very important that we do that because it is very difficult to keep starting new organizations all the time, and ADC is a base and is funding and is organization. And so if we develop a women's caucus from here and move on, we will handle many of the problems that we're talking about. First, we will deal with our own problems as Arab American women of all faiths, and also use the caucus as a base to connect in an official and strong way with the feminist movement, as was suggested by our sister here, that we do it formally and officially through the ADC Women's Caucus, connect with the National Organization for Women and de-Zionize it.
Proceed.
Hi, I'm a Canadian Arab. I must say I'd like to congratulate the ladies on the panel. They did an excellent job, and it was women on the panel, sorry. It was an excellent job, and it was very interesting. First of all, I'd like to say I think it's very important for women within Arab organizations to have their own groups, because there's certain issues that apply to them that need to be taken care of specifically. However, as some people were suggesting today, we're setting up certain committees. Now, I don't know the details of those committees. It all depends on what they're going to be. But if their intention is to mobilize and start an active movement, sort of as a liberation movement against the Arab male, I think that could hurt ourselves, because you could cause a grand reaction. I think the problem is we have to work together, because what we're dealing with is a social and cultural revolution. And what has to happen is you have to educate the Arab male, who himself doesn't know he's exploiting his wife and his daughter. He doesn't know. He does it because he thinks, you know, this is the way it's been done for thousands of years, and that's the way it's continued to be done. And I think there should be committees and organizations set up which make it mandatory and force the Arab men to come in. And this way you set an example for those men, because you'll be educating them. They'll go back home and hopefully practice these ideals at home and set examples for other Arab males. As Arab males, when they come from the Middle East, they come to America, many of them adopt American ways because it's a form of example. We have to set an example for our own community to work to liberate the, not liberate, sorry, but yeah, liberate the, what's wrong with the word liberate? Because I grew up in an Arab family, and I saw, you know, my mom, she goes to work, and she comes back home, does all the housework, and dad sits there on the chair and reads the newspaper. You know, that's, personally, I thought that was a load of crap, and I think we have to teach the Arab women how to stand up, because a lot of them are scared to stand up, and also, we have to show the Arab men, educate them, and show them that, you know, this is no longer acceptable. These attitudes are not acceptable, and they're not progressive, they're regressive, they're ways of the past. And if we continue in this way, we're going to be hurting our own cause, and without the liberation of women, we cannot liberate Palestine, and I guarantee that. And
do you have a...
Yeah, I do have a question. Why doesn't the ADC and AAUG organize committees, and why didn't make sessions like this mandatory, make it the only panel during those 2 hours, like not have another one, because we've heard a lot about Palestine and Israel so far through the whole convention. I think this one should have taken up the whole space and made have a roll call. Make everybody come.
Please allow me to say that your mother has done a good job.
I'm Reverend Afafatia Darcy, and talk about discrimination, not only being born in Syria, being the oldest of a family of seven, having five brothers, and the youngest then a sister. Being able to be a clergy woman in a system, not only as an American, but also as an Arab, making a stand for the possibility for us to be who God calls us to be, and to live out our potential in any way that we see it. I want to thank all the people here, not only the panelists, but the men here. And I've been praying about how many men were going to come to this presentation, because we need our brothers. We need our brothers as advocates for the complete liberation of men and women. And there are things that my male colleagues, clergy, can preach about coming from their lips that will be much better received by both men and women, that coming from my lips totally alienate them. And so I'm really grateful for those gathered here. I'd also like to share with you that my son, who's 10, who's a little Arab redhead back there, and my husband, who's Polish, are growing more and more excited about the standing up and speaking out on behalf of and being advocates together. So whatever we do, that's the direction. And my five brothers, the one who's an Olympic champion for Syria, who are used to sis, get this, do that, when I finally was finished with my master's degree, says, sis, don't worry, If no church calls you and you don't get a job, we'll buy you a church. So, you know, the men are growing in support and are walking hand in hand with them, and that's real good news. It's good that everybody was here.
I'd like to direct my question to Muna. Muna, I have the utmost respect for you and we're very good friends, but I have to say, I'm from the Sudan and I was very much offended by what you said. You're a literature major and you should know the implication of saying Sudanese mutilation implies an inherent mutilating, you know, inclination on the Sudanese people. I agree with Anan, I think you have to put the whole thing into context. Sudanese women are doing a great deal in Sudan on this issue, as well as other issues also. And I think that you have to talk about education, and we do have a problem with famine and really much more compelling problems at this point that women themselves are very much concerned with. So Sudanese women will talk about this issue, but of course they will emphasize they have to feed their children, and we have political problems, we also have a civil war, so there's a lot of stuff going on. To take this in isolation, it discredits the whole nation. And also, I'd like to ask Fadwa to respond to that, because I know it's a problem that is shared in Egypt, and I was disappointed that you didn't say anything about that in light of our common history, in a sense. Thank you.
I didn't want to comment on that because we had so many symposia and national meetings on the circumcision of women that I didn't really want to enter it anymore. I've written so much on it. I was part of the Al-Ahfad school conference in Sudan. I'm fully aware of the conflict between the West and the East on it. I understand both issues. I just like to say that in our studies, circumcision turns out, and of women, turns out to be much more widespread than we think. It is all over. It was all over in South America, in Australia, and so on. So it's not really, as we thought, a Nile culture thing. Another thing is that mutilation of the body is universal, and that for some reason, if you want to really liberate yourself from mutilation, don't pierce your ears. I mean, the thing is that humans have always been like to poke their bodies to make themselves more beautiful. And you know, we look at anthropology, there isn't a culture that doesn't make a hole in its body or a cut so that they get more accepted and so on. And I think they fall in the same category. The difference is that some of these simpler cultures didn't have the kind of technology or know-how so that it's done in the flashy way that breast reductions are done in this country. So the women go to, and then the computer says, look, this breast can be this way, you like it this way or that way. And then it does it with such technology, it makes it look good. But think about it, this is a very terrible operation, whether it's on the nose, on the breast, on the ears. Thank God, you know, my father was so enlightened, he said, don't pierce her ears. So they didn't do anything else either. So I don't have pierced ears. But anyway, I think that body mutilation is universal, and it's a question that we have, it's done better, nicer, cleaner, but people have been, men and women. You should see the sub-incision in Australia. It makes my students throw up in class. It's a lot of mutilation. I think we should see it in that context rather than feminist.
Okay, all right, go ahead. Okay, all right.
Look
Anan would also like to make a comment.
Yeah, I would like to make a couple comments. Number one, I have to agree with the young man who talked about the role of Sudanese women. They have done a great job, not only recently, but they have been known to be politically involved and in some progressive movement in Sudan. And there are other issues that we are concerned on. But what I said that when we tend to stereotype, either we talk about some American woman who have made it like, look at this woman or that woman, and this represent the other woman, and we tried by that to hide a lot of the problems we have. I have problem with what Fadwa said. Because if a woman decides that she doesn't like her nose and she wants to reduce it or she wants to reduce or enlarge the size, the issue is to what extent women have a right of choice over their bodies, over their future, over their education, and to what extent we are 50% of the population. Number one, it's not an Arab world issue. Number one, every progressive country in the world and the whole equality of women is a progressive issue because we are talking about 50% of the population being active and from being productive to being involved in every decision making and in politics and everything. So that's one issue. If you want to talk about equality of the woman, and there's a young man spoke there, that we want to get the woman involved in every aspect of our life, and we want to give them the choice. And in mutilation and in other thing that we're talking about today, women do not have a choice. And we have a lot of problem in our culture. As an Arab American, we carry this problem from back home. And we have these problems. And we have to address them so women become an important part of the society, a productive part, a thinking part, a partner to a man and not a subject to his wishes.
I am told that we have to evacuate this room immediately. And my sister is glaring at me in front of the microphone. If I don't yield the microphone for her this minute, she will not sing for us tonight. So if your question is a quick one, Zainab, go ahead.
Well, I was very surprised today that in a woman panel, we did not address one particular issue. As women, we talked about us going out and fighting for our rights and our careers and our education and helping the women that come from the Arab world to better themselves, learn how Arabic, etc. But nothing has been said about us women as being mothers and mothers in America. And how can we teach our children to be to find this happy medium, to come up as healthy children and grown up in a society carrying the values that we feel that are good values and accepting the American society and taking from it what is good also and growing up without being confused. We are not addressing that. There are no books written on them. There are no focus groups or anybody, even from the parents that have already gone through that and raised wonderful children like Mona and Karima. They should teach us how they did that because there are a lot of wrong ways to do it and there are a lot of very confused children. And I think it's okay to fight for our rights as women, but I think we should also learn how to bring up our children in this country. And I hope we can do something about it.
I agree with you 100%. And I guess all I can say on this subject is that what you're concerned about really should be the topic of a whole panel,
All right.
And we should work on that next year. I thank you all for coming this afternoon. We've had a lot of food for thought. We have an agenda to take to the organizers of the ADC. Perhaps we will be able to start the caucus that we talked about. But we'll see you next year.
This presentation is now concluded. It was presented at the 1988 American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee Conference in Washington, D.C., Meeting the Challenge. Produced by Audio Transcripts Limited. For additional tapes, call toll-free 1-800-338-2111. Thank you.